This interview was recorded for the Dursingham 2000 History Project on December the 5th, 1997. May I please have your full name?
Ian Stockwell.
And when did you first come to Dursingham?
In December 1968.
And do other members of your family live in the village?
Well, other than sort of my immediate family, like my son and wife, no.
What are your earliest memories of the village?
Earliest memories of one of space, green fields and accessibility to the Dursingham beach, as well as the railway.
Really? So it was a much more green site?
It certainly was. One could sort of look out of my back window and there was just green fields down to the sea.
And did you used to go for lots of walks and things?
We did. We used to make maximum use of Dursingham Beach before it was sort of fenced off by the bird people.
So what was it like then?
What was what like?
The beach.
The beach? Well, yes. Around the quarries. We used to go down there and walk around the broken concrete path, as it was then, around the quarries and picnic down there. And it was a very sort of quiet area because it was very difficult to get out onto the main road, of course, in those days at weekends.
And that broken concrete path was broken, I think,
was that would be the floods in 1950s, I think.
Yes.
Well before we got here.
Right. Have you belonged to any clubs or organisations in the village?
Yes, I've been a member of one or two things, such as the Dursingham sort of social club.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was sort of joined at the inception of the club and eventually became chairman for 4 years when it was sort of in the process of doing an extension, really. And the memberships have built up gradually during that 4 years and to a very thriving sort of community centre, really, or type centre for the whole of the village.
What sort of activities go on there?
Well, in those days it was mainly drinking. but the people did play cards and their darts and pool, and they had these various sort of typical, if you like, pub games.
Yes.
And they also had kind of groups and things on in the Saturday evenings and bank holidays.
Even though at the time Dursingham had lots of pubs?
Well, they were closing down. I mean, when I first came here, there were three more pubs than are at present, because three have closed down in the 30 years, almost 30 years I've been here. So it was a changing sort of social scene. It was a place which was much more accessible, not only to some of the younger people, but also to the female population, because at one stage, of course, females didn't venture into pubs to any great extent.
So really, the club did a good service for ladies?
Yes, for families.
Yes.
It was a family club, and it was a place you could take your family.
And does it still exist in the same form today?
As far as I'm aware, it does, yes.
But you don't go anymore?
I don't go very often now, no.
Any other organisations?
As chairman of the community centre when it started, well, for a large number of years really, until a couple of years ago. I became chairman when it first started, must have started way back in the 80s, early 80s, when the school closed, and with the reorganisation locally, and when the sort of the junior school moved up to St George's, then the old buildings there by the Fenners were converted into a sort of youth and community centre, and it was a voluntary effort to start with, and to prove very successful.
It's still used by lots of different organisations.
Absolutely,
now.
Absolutely. It was a very valuable asset for the village, and one of the highlights there was the visit by the Queen.
Oh, when was that?
Must have been 1981, 82 or somewhere around there, if memory serves me correctly. About 15 years ago.
Was this just purely out of the blue, or was it to celebrate something special?
She sort of visits some place locally every winter when she's here, especially if it's connected with her estate. And obviously I think the buildings were part of on her estate and sort of rented at a peppercorn rent.
Right.
So she was interested to see what's happening.
Now, you also belong to the church choir.
I do now, yes. It's the last couple of years. Yes.
Only the last couple of
years?
Yes,
yes. Prior to that, my wife was been in it for a large number of years and I sort of looked after the son.
Right.
My son, anyway.
What was the most important day you've ever spent in this village?
On a personal basis or as related to the community?
Well, both, if you like.
Well, on a personal basis, I mean, the most important man, the highlight of a career was, or the family was the marriage of my daughter here. But as far as the village is concerned, the one thing that stands out and always will do is a very vivid memory is when half the village came out as a big protest against the possible stopping of the bypass application.
Right.
Years ago, and we stopped all the traffic.
Now, why did people feel so strongly that we needed this bypass?
Because the amount of traffic on the then existing A148 or 1149, whatever it is, was so heavy that you simply could not get out at weekends if you lived off the roads, and one part of the village would even venture down to another part of the village because of the density of traffic. So from an environmental point of view, within the village, it was absolutely essential. And the delays for those who were going to Hunstad were tolerable, I would have thought.
And this had been mooted
for
a long while.
Oh, yes, back in the 20s and 30s, I think.
Right,
yes.
And it had become something that we thought we would never get.
Absolutely.
What was the final straw? What caused this?
Well, the application was going along very nicely, and then suddenly it was pulled into the Department of Environment. To say which is the most unusual thing to pull the application in when it was all going through the normal sort of procedures, with a view to stopping it or not permitting it. And I think that was the last straw. And so there was great sort of protest. And we had this marvellous sort of march down the road and stopped all the traffic for hours around.
This was nothing to do with the moth.
Well, the moth was there, this moth. I don't know whether anybody's ever found this moth, this mythical moth, or small moth that's on Dursingham Fen, which is supposed to be a rarity. But in the end of the day, I mean, the whole thing was solved very simply by just allowing water to drain from one part to another, therefore the fen part was protected.
Right. And it has been... I mean, the only people who lost, I think, are some of the shops... Now.
Well, in fact, ironically, that's not the case, because the village became quieter, then there was more opportunity, and people took the opportunity to actually shop within the village. In fact, more shops have opened since the bypass has been sort of built and seem to have developed and grown to an extent where one didn't see previously than before.
So we've become much more a centred village rather than just a road through to Kingston.
Well, certainly local shops seem to be used more frequently than they were before.
Right. I don't suppose... Can you remember a particularly worst time?
Probably... Well, no, the old times here have been quite happy, really. I suppose the worst time was when we all got blocked in with snow some years ago.
Ah, yes. Was that in the 70s?
Probably late 70s. I know that King's Lynn was cut off as well, but certainly you couldn't get out of Valley Rise and you couldn't get out of the village for a day or so. And all the bread and all the milk came into Faxter's, and sort of one had to go to Faxter's to get the bread and the milk, and we couldn't really get out of the village to any great extent for a day or two.
That's
and then
right.
a lot of people in the small hamlets round about were cut off for several days.
And there were no buses, were there?
No buses, no.
And you could just walk across the middle of the main road?
Yes, there was no traffic, no nothing. I mean, prior to that, in about 1969 it must have been, before the railways were closed, I remember that we were cut off again with snow, and the only way into King's Lynn, I sort of taught in King's Lynn, was they used the railway.
Yes.
I waited for the train got me in, and I found the school had been closed. I'd come back again. But nevertheless, the railway line was a very useful means of communication.
It was sadly missed.
Sadly missed. I mean, it was an absolute travesty that they closed it down. But of course, in those days, I used to know there was going to be this amazing growth of cars and everything else.
Yes, it wouldn't be used in the same way today.
No.
What are the biggest changes that you've seen in this village?
Well, it's just the sheer sort of number of houses that have been built. I mean, the place has virtually doubled in the time I've been here in terms of houses. I mean, when I first got onto the local council, that's the district council in 1973, I virtually could tell you every name of every person in every household, but I mean, the changes have been so great that it's impossible to do that now. The electorate's virtually doubled in that time, and tremendous changes from that point of view.
Now, you were on the local council for quite a long time.
I was on the district council from 1973 to 1995, yes.
Right, so can you remember anything of particular?
Well, the bypass was one of the things that one did. And I suppose one tried to preserve the past and try through open spaces, but unfortunately those that drew up the local plans in the 60s didn't necessarily envisage the tremendous growth that did take place over the past 20 years, and didn't always allocate green space when perhaps I might have done, and so it prevented keeping certain spaces open.
So was most of your problems to do with planning?
Most
of that kind?
Mainly planning, yes. Because, well, the authority is responsible for planning, so you know, you used to get lots of queries regarding planning applications, occasionally housing.
And it was your job to try and say no if you felt it was affecting the history of the
village. Well, you looked at the arguments on both sides. I mean, there was obviously the planning regulations which governed to what you could do and what you couldn't do. There were the various policies which the council had relative to certain types of development in certain places, and that yet you had the wishes of the individual. So it's really a matter of trying to get a balance between the three and use a bit of common sense.
Now, from that point of view as a councillor, are we now full as a village, do you think?
Virtually. Once the suitor developments has been completed at Mount Batten, I think that's the last sort of really major sort of development there is in the village. There may be odd little bits of infill. What we've tried to do with the last sort of local plan, which is yet to be finalised, but certainly in the early stages when I was still on the council, that we tried to put a green belt all the way around Dersium and tried to preserve as much open space as we could.
There seems to be a kind of almost natural green belt now, doesn't there?
Yes, but it has to be put onto the map and said this will be green, this is a non-development area. Otherwise, there'll be pressure to develop these things over the years.
The bypass now makes an almost natural break.
It does. It does. Yes.
And we have that little wood at the back.
Life wood. Yes.
Yes.
That's a break.
And is that privately owned?
As far as I'm aware. Yes.
Yes. So that's fairly sacrosanct.
Well, that has now been. It's part of the so-called, if you like, the little green belt between here and Inglethorpe. Otherwise, the two will merge together. Likewise, Inglethorpe and Stettersham.
Right,
and
of course,
trying to keep them separate entities.
And of course, the fact that Sandringham takes up so much.
Sandringham obviously provides a buffer.
Yes.
To the south and east.
So really, with every little tiny piece of land, for example, the old house near the Scout Hall, near the old school across the road. That's very interesting to watch what they're doing there. I mean, I know they've left the old barn opposite the pub.
Yes, another one you made.
It'll be interesting to see, because they seem to fill every little space with as much housing.
Yes.
But then this is...
So that's That might be sort of in a listed area. I think the building might have been listed, was it, before it was pulled down? It had to be sort of restored in almost its former glory, I would imagine, or something very similar to it.
How do you feel that all this building ties in with the idea of being short of water in this area?
I wasn't aware we were that short of water in this area. I thought, the Anglian Water, if I was one of those authorities that seem to have plenty and export it to counties further south.
So you don't think that we should be keeping it for ourselves, that with all this expansion of housing?
No, it's a national asset, just put it there.
What would you like to see happen in the village in the future?
I think as long as the future inhabitants of the village can try to retain the historical character. I think in part we've probably failed the past and that we haven't retained it quite as we could have done. But I hope now that we're probably more aware of our heritage than we have been before, that those coming will not neglect it and try to retain that sort of peculiar character of Dersing, because it's spread, it's got no particular centre, but it's certainly areas near the church and that part of the Carstone set up ought to be preserved.
Yes, I mean, we've got
basic
that
road structure.
Beautiful old tithe barn,
yes,
which doesn't really do anything. What would you like to see go in there?
Well, it's used for storage, isn't it? Reclaimed bricks and tiles and stuff for keeping the older properties in repair. So I mean, so it has probably got a sensible use from that point of view.
And one of the points that was raised when we did the Millennium Committee at the very beginning, there was a lot of people wanted some kind of Millennium Hall in the village.
Mm.
What's your opinion about that?
I would have thought the village is actually well provided for halls, and I think that one of the problems with providing any of these structures is the keeping the thing going once it's built. It's not so much raising the capital, and the Millennium Fund might give you some capital towards it, it's the revenue expenses afterwards to keep the things going.
Yes, and people don't like paying for that afterwards,
not
they?
Not the normally economic price.
So we don't really have a need for one, you think?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought with the the church hall, which provides a good facility that might well be improved. I mean, there's an opportunity to say, well, can that be sensibly refurbished and for the Millennium and maximise uses there. There's a small hall at the back of the Methodist Church. Then, of course, you've got Gamekeepers, the old hotel, which have got sort of quite good facilities for functions and things. But I would have thought that the grown up halls and the.
And also, if you decided to have one, where would it go? Of course, was the other.
Well, precisely, because there's no real place for it unless you use the very bits of green space that I was talking about earlier.
And if someone from outside said to you, where would you say is the village centre, the middle of the village, where would you say it was?
Well, it hasn't got a middle.
No.
The nearest part to the heart is the sort of northern end, around sort of Post Office Road, Chapel Road.
And Butchins.
And that part, and down towards Thaxter's and the recreation ground.
Yes. It's, in a way, a pity we haven't got a central.
Yeah, but there are certainly two distinct parts, the Manor Road part and the northern part, which I think in the past were sort of a competition with each other. Years gone past. It would be interesting to see, though, all those people who come along, say, 100 years from now, whether, in fact, they put a total preservation order on the village, because all the properties will no doubt need renewing,
That'll
all be well over 100 years old. And one will have to think now, do you sort of renovate or do you knock down and rebuild?
Yes.
And if you knock down and rebuild, do you retain the existing sort of street pattern or do you try to do something entirely different?
Now it's interesting.
And a pedestrianised centre and roads around the middle of them.
In the paper this morning, they were saying that one of the many surveys that we are an extremely successful place, this area, for retaining elderly people to a ripe old age.
Yes.
And that it's an extremely popular place for elderly people to come to live. Can you...
Northwest Norfolk or Jersey?
Basically. Well, this area, yes.
Yes. I mean, it has many attractions, I suppose. A lot of people drift up from the southeast, don't they, and from the more urban areas into the rural areas, and there's no doubt about it, the pace of life here is much slower than it is in some of the big city areas where many of the older people come from.
And you think, and the air, the sort of quality of air?
Well, it amazes me because it's a very cold air.
Yes.
I mean, and you have these lazy winds, don't you, that go through you rather than around you. And it always seems to be cold and damp. And yet old people thrive on it.
Yes.
On the other hand, there's more nitrates in the water, which is good for you, so I understand now. In a recent article, contrary to what we heard previously, so that might help. No, I think it's just the general sort of pace of life.
Yes, so people don't seem to suffer from stress. No,
and it's easy to go for walks and things because yes. It's not too hilly.
And it is quite a beautiful area, really.
Well, you've got a wide variety of scenery. I mean, when I first moved here in 68, I don't suppose I ever dreamt that I would stay here so long. But when you've got here, it's an ideal place to bring up a family. You've got the Sandringham Woods, you've got the beaches, you've got a small town, small market town, I suppose, Kingsdene nearby, which provides most of the things.
Yes.
It's an ideal place to bring up a child.
Yes,
a family.
And you've even got a very pleasant city, Norwich, within a reasonable travelling distance.
Absolutely, yeah. Or you can go to Cambridge or Peterborough.
Yes.
Good facilities.
Which brings me to this question. Do you intend to retire in Dursingham?
It looks rather that way. The answer to that must be yes.
Right.
Yes, I intend to retire in the next few years. So by the time of the year 2000, I might make my retirement coincide with the millennium.
Ah, well, this is... what does the millennium mean to you, is my
means retirement. yes.
Something pleasant to look forward to.
Absolutely, yes.
Finally, what would you like to say to someone in Dursingham in 100 years' time?
Well, just ask them whether they are looking back when they reflect on their 50 or 60 years, whatever it may be. It's whether they've actually felt they've preserved the historical heritage that we left
them.
Yes.
You wouldn't like to see it become just a suburb of King's Lynn?
Certainly not. And I'd hope that it can retain its entity somehow or other, and some sort of community spirit. There used to be a tremendous community spirit, certainly in the 60s and 70s, and perhaps not quite such a spirit today, because I think part of it, because it's got so large. And because it's got so large, there are huge sections there. You never see the people and never meet them, so you don't know who they are. Whereas before, when it was smaller, you always sort of bumped into them.
That's right. And yeah. Do you think this idea of lack of community spirit is to do with the way we live anyway today?
Well, partly. Partly, but I think certainly there's changing social habits, yes, to do with it. But I think the size has a lot to do with it.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Pleasure.